Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now, why so many Americans need flood insurance and don't have it.
The rain will barely let up here on this coast for another 24 hours.
Winds of up to 150 kilometers an hour tearing down much in their path.
Flash floods and tornadoes are still a threat. At least 17 people are dead. Hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses are without power.
And we've seen complete parts of major highways in this area completely flooded out. Roads closed. We saw bungalow-style homes with floodwaters coming up to the windows.
Hurricane wind speed gets a lot of attention, but as the survivors of Harvey and Sandy and Hugo and Katrina and now Florence know, it's often the storm surge and the torrential rains that do the most damage. Plenty of Minnesotans and Midwesterners know what it means to lose property and possessions to floodwaters. Overall, billions of dollars are lost to flood damage each year. So much, in fact, that the National Flood Insurance Program itself is underwater, in debt, and struggling to meet its obligations. Congress is due to reform the NFIP by the end of November. We're going to talk about what the program needs, and I'd like to hear from you. If you've sustained some serious damage to flooding, did your homeowner's policy cover it? And for those who are of us who are underwriting the flooding and disaster losses as taxpayers, how do we feel about the idea of rebuilding some of these flooded homes again and again? So if you've sustained flooding, and we've sure had plenty of it in our region, did your homeowner's policy cover it? Where did you go to get help? And then as taxpayers, I'd like us to think about how we feel about coming in and rebuilding some of these flooded properties again and again, because that's what happens in some parts of the country. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Our guest today, Rachel Cletus, is with us, lead economist and policy director with the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists, and she's with us today from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Rachel, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Rob Moore is with us, senior policy analyst of the National Resources Defense Council. He joins us from WBEZ in Chicago today. And Rob, welcome to you. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Rob, why do so few Americans have flood insurance?
Well, that's a great question. I think a lot of members of Congress and a lot of people in the disaster preparedness world ask themselves that question every day. I think the bottom line is that insurance, flood insurance, is often seen as an additional expense, and people sometimes aren't willing to pay it and oftentimes aren't able to pay it, especially if they're lower income Americans. But it's really an essential service that they need to have, just as they need to have insurance on their automobile, that they need to have a regular homeowner's policy, and they need to have health insurance. But flood insurance availability is not the only problem. You know, insurance doesn't actually prevent flooding, and I think that's something we often overlook in this discussion.
Let me grab a call here from Pat in Rochester. Hi, Pat. It sounds like you've had some experience with this.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A number of years ago, shortly after purchasing our home, I did investigate getting flood insurance. And I talked to an insurance agent at the time. I did my own research. I, for instance, tried to look up what my flood risk was using the federal government flood maps.
Mm-hmm.
I found the entire process to be very confusing, arduous, and the quote I got was extraordinarily expensive. And the conditions placed in the flood insurance left a real coverage gap between water in the basement and full-out flood. that made the whole thing very unappealing.
It sounds like you ended up deciding not to do it, Pat. Is that right?
That is correct. I had decided not to do it for the price I was quoted and for the risk I would assume. It did not make any financial sense.
Rachel, do you hear this frequently from homeowners who think, I may need this. Now what happens when I try to buy it?
Yeah, it is indeed a challenge that, by and large, our nation is very much underinsured when it comes to flood insurance. Many people don't buy insurance unless they're required to by their mortgage lender, and that's only the case in so-called special flood hazard areas, the highest risk areas as designated by FEMA flood risk maps, where if you have a federally backed mortgage, you're required to carry insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program, most likely, because that is the single biggest cover source of insurance for homeowners and small businesses. But the reality is that many people don't realize the risk that they face outside of those areas. We're seeing worsening heavy rainfall events, including in the Midwest. We're seeing coastal flooding and storm surge get worse as sea level rises. And our development patterns are contributing to this flood risk, as we saw in the case of Harvey, where we have these very highly developed paved areas that don't allow the rainwater to drain away. And so this means that many people aren't aware of their risk and are not purchasing insurance, even though they might need it.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of your caller,
sure,
I really commend him for going through and doing this research. What I would encourage is also to look at opportunities to reduce your insurance premiums by investing in flood mitigation actions, because that can bring down your premiums significantly.
So, Rachel, just to be clear on the mitigation, things you can do to your house and your property that makes you less of a risk to have everything destroyed by floodwaters, and then you bring down the premium. Is that right?
Absolutely. There are things individual homeowners can do, such as elevating their homes. There are things communities can do by, for example, protecting open spaces that can absorb the water better, investing in better drainage. So there are community-wide measures that can be taken. There are individual homeowner measures that can be taken that can really help reduce your flood insurance premium.
Rob, the other thing I heard from Pat is he tried to assess his own flood risk, and it was a mess trying to figure that out. And I, in reading, preparing for the show, I was seeing that the flood risk maps are not even up to date. What's going on with that?
Yeah, flood risk maps that are produced by FEMA are well known to be often out of date, sometimes by 10 years, 20 years.
Wow.
When Hurricane Sandy hit New York City, those flood maps hadn't been updated since 1983, if I'm not mistaken. So it can be very difficult just looking at the flood maps to determine what your flood risks really are. What makes it even harder is that in many states, I believe Minnesota may be one of these, it can also be hard when you're purchasing a home to find out if a home has ever been damaged before.
Hmm.
In many states, a home seller is not required to disclose to a buyer if the home has flooded and how extensive damages were if it has flooded. And that's a major liability. People don't know what they're getting into when they make the biggest investment of their lives. Even if you own your home currently and you're in the caller's situation, well, I want to know if I should buy flood insurance. I think I'll call FEMA. They know if a flood damage claim has ever been filed. You might call FEMA hoping to get that information, and they will even tell you they won't give you that. That data.
Yeah.
Until you've already purchased insurance and filed your first damage claim, which really isn't the most helpful time to find
exactly
out if your home has a flood history.
Can I ask you real quick why the maps are so out of date?
A lot of it boils down to funding. Congress has in past years chronically underfunded our efforts to map the nation's floodplains. Even if we had up-to-date flood maps, however, they still wouldn't be a very accurate barometer of flood risk, especially in coastal areas, because our flood maps don't actually account for future projections of flood risk that are attributable to things like sea level rise or more extreme weather events like we're seeing play out in the Carolinas right now with Hurricane Florence and that we saw play out in Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria last year. Those types of events are not incorporated into the models to project what your future flood risk is. So even if you have the most up-to-date flood maps, they're out of date almost from the day they're printed.
Heidi says on Twitter, when we bought our first home, we asked our insurer about it and they wouldn't give it to us because we weren't in a flood zone. 2 months later, we had 4 inches of water in our basement and our next door neighbor had basement water to their hips. To the phones here to Chris and Edina. Hi, Chris. What's your experience with this?
I'm a contractor and I've helped some of my customers deal with flooding. And I just wanted to mention, I hope the gentleman that's on your call can answer this more in more detail than I can. But something that people don't often understand is what they're actually covered for.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen happen is people experience flooding in their basement and then they go to file an insurance claim and they'll find out they're not covered because there's language in their policy that says, unless the water backs up into your home through your existing sump pump or drain tile, that's the only way that it's covered. So if it came over your foundation walls or through the foundation, they find out that they're not covered. And there's a lot of other loopholes to your previous caller's point. It's very confusing.
Hey, Chris, I'm really glad you brought that up because I had some questions about that as well. Rachel, does it matter how the flooding actually happens as to whether you're covered? It sounds like Chris is saying yes.
Yes, indeed. It is important for homeowners to read the fine print in their flood insurance policies to understand what's covered and what's not. Through the National Flood Insurance Program, what's covered is a flood as defined by Congress, by FEMA, and how it administers the program. And so it really does have to do with floods coming in from an overflow of inland or tidal waters, if you have rapid surface runoff, when there are extreme precipitation events, those types of things that are covered by flood. So if the water were to enter your building in other ways, it may not be covered by your National Flood Insurance Program policy. That's really important to recognize and perhaps to buy supplementary insurance through other sources to cover damage to your belongings, et cetera, that may not be covered through the NFIP. But even having the minimal coverage that the NFIP offers can be really crucial, and not enough homeowners currently carry it. To the extent that we have flood insurance coverage in this country and we see uptake, people purchasing this insurance, it tends to be in coastal areas, in the highest risk areas right along the coast. But what we're recognizing increasingly is that we have heightened risk even in inland areas because of riverine flooding, especially as climate change and our development patterns are contributing to worsening flood events when we see these heavy rainfall events. So that's what's really important for people to understand. Just even carrying this basic insurance can make a big difference in terms of getting back on your feet after a flood event. It may not make you whole entirely, but it's a step forward. It's definitely better than going without.
Rachel, I just want to emphasize again what you said, that there are more people on the coasts who recognize that they're potentially in a flood zone. But we're seeing more and more flooding happening if you're inland on waterways, right? Or even if you're not right directly on a waterway. I mean, that's one of the changes that we're seeing with these rain events that climate change is bringing to us. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Scientists, even so far, we've seen an observed increase in these extreme precipitation events, including in the Midwest and the Northeast. And scientists have projected that as our climate warms, as global warming worsens, we will see a much greater increase in these events, including in the Midwest. And so that means that many more places will start to experience this kind of flooding. And we're just not building, rebuilding, and preparing ahead of time for these events. Instead, we're dealing with them as one-off disasters, trying to pick up the pieces afterwards. We really have to change the way we think about preparing for these types of events well in advance, because we know that they're going to get worse.
This is a conversation, if you've just gotten in on it, on flooding, why many Americans need flood insurance and don't have it, why it can be difficult to get flood insurance. It's confusing to see what your risk is. It's confusing to try to figure out the policies. Rachel Cletus with us from the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists, and Rob Moore with us from the National Resources Defense Council. I want to hear from you this morning if you've sustained some serious damage to flooding, or you've moved into a place and you've thought, we may need flood insurance, how you figured that out, what happened if you sustained some flooding. And for those of us who are underwriting flooding and disaster loss as taxpayers, we're going to talk about this as well. How do we feel about the idea of rebuilding some of these properties again and again? And that doesn't occur through the NFIP. So we'll talk about that with our guests as well. 651-227-6000. Wherever you are in the region, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR to Brian in St. Paul. Hi, Brian.
Oh, hi. I lived in Winona when it flooded, I think, in 2007.
I remember that.
And we got over a foot of rain in 24 hours. And the floodwater, the creek near my house rose and like 30 feet above normal, just unbelievable. And the floodwater came in the basement windows. It actually, the water pressure blew the windows right out of the openings.
Wow.
And water was pouring into my basement. It sounded like Niagara Falls in my house. And the thing that was really eerie was when the roaring water stopped and it became perfectly quiet. That's when I realized that my basement was completely full of water to the top.
No more room
and
for the water.
That's right. It was quiet. Is the water level inside and outside were the same. But it turns out that because of the way the water came in, homeowners insurance wouldn't cover that kind of flooding because it wasn't water that came backed up through your
right.
sewer backing up or,
right.
like another caller mentioned, the sump pump backing up. Homeowners insurance doesn't cover a lot of flooding, and flood insurance wouldn't have covered that either because it won't cover anything below grade. So if I had purchased homeowners insurance and my house wasn't in a floodplain according to the maps, not a 100-year floodplain, but that was a 500-year or a 1,000-year flood event.
And yet we're seeing those, Rob, more and more often. And what are you supposed to do if you're a homeowner like Brian to try to protect against that?
Yeah, it's a common problem, and it's a growing problem. And it gets back to something that Rachel mentioned. And a lot of it has to do with how we build, where we build, and what we build. The fact of the matter is homes that have a basement, whether it's a finished basement or an unfinished basement that maybe you just have your hot water heater and washer and dryer in, a basement is the low point in your home, and therefore it is the most vulnerable to flooding. And you're correct. The National Flood Insurance Program will not cover damages in a basement because of that risk. So a lot of it has to do with are we building in locations where flood risk is elevated, and should we be building in areas where flood risk is elevated or is expected to get even worse?
Rob, what wasn't
And then the second question is how should we be building there? You know, it's not a coincidence that you see homes in coastal areas and along major rivers that are elevated, either on stilts or they have a very tall foundation. That's actually a requirement of the National Flood Insurance Program, that homes be – if you're going to build in a high-risk area, that you build in a way that attempts to lower the potential for flood damages.
Rob, what? Let me get in on this. Wasn't there an attempt in 2012 when the federal government required high-risk homeowners to pay the full cost of their own flood insurance? And there was such an outcry that Congress ended up reversing the policy in 2014. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. There were some changes made to make sure that people who were receiving subsidized rates for flood insurance through the federal government paid something more like an actuarially calculated risk-based rate. And the results of that would have been rates that were perhaps outside of the ability of some people to actually afford them. So there was some changes made in 2014 to make those prices phase in over a much longer time period. But this also gets back to a point that I mentioned earlier. For homes that are repeatedly at risk of flooding, or have already flooded multiple times. Insurance doesn't stop flooding from happening. It simply gives you an ability to rebuild. And one of the main problems we have in this country is that we have to switch our emphasis from focusing on rebuilding in the exact same location that we know is vulnerable and in the exact same way that is already proven to make us susceptible to flooding. And we have to rethink what we're doing in the aftermath of these disasters. Should people rebuild? Oftentimes, people don't even want to rebuild. After going through four or five floods, you can imagine that people are just tired of living with this recurring problem that nobody wants to live with.
Yeah. Let me grab a call on
that. But assistance to rebuild comes very fast. Assistance to relocate and perhaps move to a safer location, you'll wait years for that if it ever arrives.
Call here from Bob in St. Paul. Hi, Bob.
Hey, I grew up out in Rapid City, South Dakota, which was prone to flash floods. And they had a couple back in the 50s and 60s, but they let people rebuild. They had a nasty one in 72 where more than 150 people were killed. And the city finally decided that they would make a flood abatement zone that was several hundred yards wide mm-hmm. on the creek that ran through town
right.
so that people couldn't rebuild or build new, period. And I just wonder why it's not considered negligent on the part of a town or city, as well as insurance companies, to let people build or rebuild in places where it's likely to flood.
Rachel, do you have an answer to that?
Yeah, your caller has hit on a very important point. People often think of the National Flood Insurance Program as simply a source of insurance. But this program, which is 50 years old now, was originally intended to be not just an insurance program, but a floodplain management and a flood risk mitigation program. So it was supposed to be designed to encourage people to take measures, communities, not just individual homeowners, to take measures like the ones the caller just described, to help reduce flood risk over time. And what's happened is over time, Congress has not funded the updating of the flood risk maps, as Rob described. We also don't have adequate money going into these flood risk reduction measures ahead of time, ahead of disasters, giving communities and homeowners other options than just a business as usual, rebuilding, building, staying in place. So if we had more of this money flowing in terms of grants and loans, low-interest loans that people and communities could avail of to help reduce their risk, that could really start to change the calculus of how damaging these floods are. It would also give people options because it's really hard. A home is often a person's single biggest asset. Mm-hmm. A lot of these folks are middle-income folks. It's very hard to just walk away from your home because it's starting to flood. So can we give people better options, ways to protect their homes, but also their financial well-being so that they can start to take measures to better protect their property and themselves? And in the process, this will serve the taxpayer well, too, because as Rob was saying, there are properties that get flooded repeatedly. Instead of spending taxpayer dollars repeatedly in rebuilding these homes, a fraction of that money could be spent in helping people relocate to safer areas.
Call here from Max in St. Paul. Hi, Max.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So, yeah, just to like kind of double on Bob's point, you know, for those in high-risk areas, before I lived in Minnesota, I lived in Colorado, and you'd hear a lot of people who would live in houses in the middle of the woods, and their houses would get destroyed by fires every 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you talk to them, they'd say, well, we just like living in the area. With all due respect, that shouldn't be on me because you like living in the area to rebuild your house every 3 or 4 years when you know that there's a really high likelihood. For those that have a fluke flood happen, absolutely they should be covered. But I don't understand why my taxpayer money should be going to somebody who knows and still decides to build in an area where there's a high risk of an incident.
Yeah. Rachel, let me come back to your point then that you just made, which I think addresses what Max is asking. Where would those grants, where would the money come from? Would that come through the NFIP or some other agency?
The National Flood Insurance Program does have flood mitigation grants attached to it, but FEMA also separately administers what it calls hazard mitigation grants, pre-disaster hazard mitigation grants. And these grant programs need to be better funded so that people can take these measures ahead of time. The Department of Housing and Urban Development also provides money, especially for low-income communities, to help people rebuild in a more resilient way in the aftermath of disasters. These are the kinds of programs that Congress needs to up the funding for, make sure that these monies are flowing to the communities that need them the most, including low-income communities, especially low-income communities. I should mention at this point that the Trump administration has tried repeatedly to cut funding for these programs, and it's because Congress holds the purse strings and has reinstated funding that we still have some funding flowing to these FEMA and HUD programs.
Huh.
But we have an administration that's frankly working at odds to building resilience in the aftermath of disasters.
Rob, just a quick note here. The NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program, is primarily supported by premium holders, right? The premiums that policyholders pay?
Well, it's supposed to be.
Ah.
Because the damages paid out by the flood insurance program have far exceeded the premiums collected dating back to about 2005 in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, the program's been forced to borrow money from the U.S. Treasury, which means essentially taxpayers are now responsible for a debt that had Congress not forgiven $16 billion of it last year would be far in excess of $30 billion total at present. Something else that's important to remember, that debt is amassed because of damages being paid. And getting back to the caller we just heard from, a lot of those damages are incurred on properties that flood multiple times. We spent about $5.5 billion rebuilding some of the most flood-prone properties that are insured through the National Flood Insurance Program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only 30,000 properties. Relatively small number of properties are responsible for the overwhelming number of damage claims. And why are those properties still there, and why were they built in the first place? A lot of that gets down to communities not enforcing their building codes and zoning ordinances properly, and allowing that type of development to take place. We really need to focus, as Rachel and I have both been saying, really need to focus on how we decrease the risks in these areas. But we also need something of a Hippocratic oath for development, that we will not make the problem worse by continuing to allow development in areas that we know are prone to flooding today and are going to be even more prone to flooding in the future.
Joelle says, I'm A-okay with my taxes helping to rebuild homes for people impacted by flooding, especially when these storms will disproportionately impact low-wealth folks. The actors that have perpetuated climate change should be on the hook for rebuilding flooded homes. To another listener here on Twitter, basements in areas like the Red River Valley of the North are a vital element in house heating systems, gives a place for cold air to go. Elevated housing is harder to keep warm in the winter. How can people in areas with very cold winters as well as flood risk cope? To the phones to Terry in Pequot Lakes. Hi, Terry.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
I live in Crow Wing County, and about 2 years ago, I got a letter from my bank requiring me to buy flood insurance.
Mm.
And apparently the Minnesota DNR, in concert with FEMA, had gone through and revised the flood zones. So I don't know how extensive that was in Minnesota. At least it was covered in Crow Wing County. And so what I found out was that if you have a mortgage, FDIC requires flood insurance if you're in a flood zone. So that kind of answers a lot of the questions about how do you get notified you're required to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that I had my lake home is like 35 feet above the lake level. I have a garage up there, but I have a storage building down by the lake that a corner of it was in the flood zone.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest caution, when I looked into flood insurance, come to find out the National Flood Insurance Program only covers the primary residence and a garage, a secondary garage. So the policy that I was, you know, they wanted me to buy for a cost of about $700-$800 a year would not provide any coverage for the building that they said was in the flood zone.
Huh.
Also, the other thing that I discovered was that there's certain parts of the buildings that are covered and certain ones that aren't. For instance, they cover sheetrock, but they don't cover wood paneling or wood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, up in this area, the big thing is the tongue and groove oak or tongue and groove pine wood interiors. And I come to find out none of that would be covered under the flood policy.
Terry, I appreciate the call, the kind of the ins and outs of trying to get the right flood insurance. A call here from Seal in St. Paul. Seal, you're with the State Floodplain Program, is that right?
I am.
What can
I
you
am.
Tell us in the next couple minutes?
Well, a couple things I wanted to point out. One of the earlier callers brought up that they had been told by their agent that they couldn't get flood insurance because they weren't in the flood zone. Totally incorrect. As long as you're in a community that participates in the National Flood Insurance Program, flood insurance is available in all zones. That's 95% of Minnesota's population, and it's much cheaper if you're not in those flood zones. So like Brian mentioned earlier that he was outside of the floodplain, he could have gotten a cheaper flood insurance policy. And if the water comes overland and bursts through those windows and goes in, then the flood insurance does cover that kind of flooding. And in the basement, there is coverage. It's just that it's for the foundation. It's for your furnace and water heater, it washer, dryer, just limited things. It doesn't cover your furniture and your belongings, but there is coverage for the main things that people have damaged in their basements for water that comes overland into their basements.
Seal, I have a quick question before we have to wrap the show. Do most insurance agents have this information, know how to get this information, or is it really worth a call to the State Floodplain Program to get the details?
The agents should have that information, but we do see that the agent education is not the best and that there are many agents that are not well informed. Community should have good information. The state program, we work with the communities to get that information out there. And the communities do have higher regulations for the newer construction, but that is an area where there's a lot of uninformed agents out there right now.
Seal, really glad you called. Thanks for the information. Again, that's the State Floodplain Program. To get your own information about where you live and insurance. Rob, Rachel, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.